The City Club of Boise is a nonpartisan forum dedicated to free speech and the open exchange of ideas on issues critical to the Intermountain Northwest. Its motto is, "Things happen when people start talking." You can find information regarding forums, salons, and tours at cityclubofboise.org. The premier sponsor for the City Club is AARP. Annual sponsors include Northwest Nazarene University and the Idaho Humanities Council. The moderator for today's forum is Greg Hahn.
Hello, and welcome to today's City Club of Boise Forum, exploring the future of Idaho's history with Idaho State Historical Society Executive Director Janet Gallimore. I'm Greg Hahn. I'm a board member at the City Club and today's moderator. I want to welcome our radio listeners today. They're joining us on Boise State Public Radio on KBSX 91.5 and its affiliates throughout southern Idaho and northern Nevada. Boise State Public Radio is one of the City Club's media sponsors, along with KBOI 670, the Idaho Statesman, and Pepper Shock Media. I want to thank them for their support. All City Club forums are made possible by the support of our forum series sponsors, Micron Technology and the Echelon Group. I really think today's talk is going to spark your curiosity. Our speaker today, Director Gallimore, has been leading her state agency through a transformative time, undergoing the first major renovation to Idaho's premier historical museum in some 40 years. To put that in perspective, think about this. Idaho's only been a state for 128 years. 39 years is like 30% of our state's history. Of course, we'll learn over the next hour that the goal of the Idaho State Historical Society is to bring us an understanding of our history that goes far beyond statehood. As the museum opens this fall with completely new experiences, a completely new look and feel, and even a new name, it will bring together a look at a history of our region in ways that I don't think were probably possible back when the museum was expanded in 1980, and certainly not when it was initially constructed in the 1940s. Back when Boise State was programming its Center for the Fine Arts, I remember being struck by the number of studies that said how life-changing an experience it is for one visit for a child. One visit to a museum, an art museum, a historical museum, can spark a lifetime of love and appreciation of the culture, history, and the arts. Director Gallimore understands this value of that aha moment that such an experience can have. And how important it is at this particular museum. I read in the Statesman the other day, the year that it closed for renovations, nearly 10,000 of the museum's 40,000 visitors were school children. And this coming year, Director Gallimore anticipates more than twice that many people are going to tour the facility. Of course, her agency does more than run the Idaho State Museum. The Historical Society overviews the Idaho State Archives and State Records Center, the State Historic Preservation Office, and the Historic Sites Program. She is a graduate of the J. Paul Getty Museum Management Institute. She holds degrees from National Lewis University and Barrett College, both private colleges near Chicago, where she began her career in historical education and preservation. For more than 20 years there, she was the director of cultural resources for the Lake County Forest Preserves. That group maintains such sites as the Lake County Discovery Museum, the Bonner Heritage Farm, the Adlai Stevenson Historic Home, and more. She's led the Historic Society here in Idaho since 2007, and last year was awarded in Sun Valley at the Sun Valley Film Festival the Grand Dame Award, I suppose, in Sun Valley, for cultural leadership. I am pleased to turn the podium over to Jan Gallimore.
Great to have the opportunity to talk to City Club today about the development of our new state museum. And I really want to emphasize the idea of designing for impact. Our agency, as you just heard from Greg, preserves and promotes history of Idaho. We were founded in 1881, and I love that we are that full-purpose agency that Greg described, the State Museum, the State Archives, the SHPO, and historic sites. And to give you a context for United States history, there's 21 states that have that umbrella of the State Historical Society over all of those entities. It really adds to resource sharing, leveraging, marketing, and what have you. We're governed by a board of trustees that are appointed by our governor, most of which are here today in the audience, and I want to thank them for their leadership and vision, for without that we would not be having this conversation. Our agency provides information that enables informed decisions, gives Idaho voice to federal decision-making, teaches historical and civic literacy, and stewards the state's irreplaceable state-owned collections. I am just really thrilled to think about that the State Historical Society and the state are on the cusp of creating history. We're currently stand at the fifth year of envisioning, planning, and creating the newest state museum in our country. It is the greatest transformation of our museum since Governor Gooding recommended its creation in 1907. The State Historical Society and the State Museum were created as part of Idaho government on March 4, 1907. And as you noted in your recruitment flyer, the museum had several locations until we opened in 1950 in Julia Davis Park. In the 80s, we did renovate the building. You all will appreciate that that was a temporary renovation. And we will reopen in October of 2018, nearly 70 years since the doors first opened to the public in this exceptional setting on Capitol Boulevard. I'm sure many in this room have been involved with major facility and capital expansions, and you are familiar with the many pressing concurrent priorities of such a project. Our project's distinct elements include architectural design and engineering and construction, of course, exhibition and multimedia design, fabrication and installation, project finance, and a private fundraising campaign led by the Foundation for Idaho History, and campaign chair and vice chairs Roy Aguirre and Mary Ann Arnold. The museum move-out was really interesting. It was led by our staff, and they recruited Mountain Home Air Force Base volunteers, which saved the state about $900,000 in terms of moving the museum out of its location. It's a lot of great value to our taxpayers. And we also did a business plan to ensure future long-term financial self-sustainability. We thank the governor and first lady, the legislature, our donors, the trustees and our staff, the foundation, and I wrote hundreds, but I think it's actually thousands of people who came together to create the story of us. It is staggering to recount the complexity of this project from its inception to today. To express it in the simplest of terms, it comes down to doing the right thing, which to me entails vision, a commitment to community engagement, and a philosophy of interpreting history in a manner that's relevant to today. And then doing it the right way, executing at the highest possible levels of professional practice and process discipline. Every effort was made to execute our exhibition design at the highest level of contemporary methods, including the full integration of interpretive storyline, writing, artifact selection, photo selection, multimedia, audience research, lighting, and immersive design, all of which creates a purposeful and impactful visitor experience and maximizes our museum's role in applied, informal, and lifelong learning. I truly believe this journey will inspire. The vision for our museum was to create a new state museum that would be a fun, interactive, learning experience where people of all ages and backgrounds could come together and explore the story of Idaho. Of course, we had very explicit goals, which included modernizing that temporary infrastructure and building, increasing public access through making more public gathering space and education space available, and creating an entirely new exhibition experience that features the story of Idaho, rarely seen collections, and increased exhibition experiences for families and children. And then we established outcomes that would create impact. Our new museum deepens Idahoans' connections to their state and builds a statewide sense of community, creates an essential resource for education and lifelong learning, and contributes to the economic vitality of our state. So you might be wondering, when you lay claim to such outcomes, the question is, what steps do we take to ensure that we can deliver the intended impact to our citizens, and how do we know if we really succeed? To achieve those goals and outcomes, the museum planning has been really executed with precision, current best practices, and future trends. So we were very fortunate to work with top local and national consultants on this project, including Boise's LKV Architects and nationally recognized museum exhibition designers. Andrew Merrill and associates led the design process, and they were selected because of their relevant experience and their commitment to discipline, audience-focused engagement. They also designed the exhibitions for the Colorado History Center and North Carolina State Museum and rose to the top of our list as we were considering our selection. The first step in that process, I know this is going to be unbelievable because it's 4 years ago, the discovery and visioning phase that included staff, Our board, Foundation for Idaho History members, stakeholders, and even the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee of the Idaho Legislature. In this phase, 41 stakeholders were engaged in conversations about our mission, the core values that we hold, our audience, and experience. They were asked their view on what role the museum should play in the life of the city, the state, the region, and our community. And then following that visioning effort, we outlined informational content of the exhibits and developed the storyline narrative. We imagined important ways in which the visitors that would come to the museum would encounter the content of the exhibits and derive meaning from it. We visualized potential uses of audiovisual, electronic, and interactive media that would energize people's experience and enhance their understanding of the content. And we charted a plan for implementation in sync with the building's renovation and our capital campaign plan. From this effort came a master plan with four guiding principles. These are outlined in one of your sheets on the table. It's sort of a summary sheet of the exhibitions. But number one, people and land shape each other. History is made by people. People make decisions, and those decisions have consequences. Everyone is a history maker. Number three, historical decisions are relevant to contemporary life, and the decisions that we make will have impact on our future. And Idaho is not an island. It has a context that's regional and national. The big idea, if you will, is that Idaho's unique shape and natural resources determine the manner in which humans harness the land and influence the development of our state. Of those many resources, water is key to the story. So the idea to interpret Idaho geographically from the Salmon River North, the Central Mountainous area, and the Snake River Plain came from these discussions and a desire that all parts of the state feel part of our remarkable museum, which was one of the direct directives that Governor Otter gave to me early in the process. He wanted everyone to be involved and everyone to see themselves there. From these guiding principles, we developed long-term themes, which include origins. This gallery examines Idaho's natural environment, the cultural origins of Idaho's first people, and how Idaho got its shape and borders. Idaho, the land and its people, which is the core story of Idaho, which interprets Idaho through these three distinct regions, largely defined by geographic differences that have influenced their residents to pursue divergent paths. The Stories from Idaho, which explores themes common to all of our human experiences, regardless of our culture or background or our origin. History Lab, where visitors will learn how to find clues in the past through documents, photographs, artifacts, and first-person accounts. And then Boomtown, all of you who have kids and grandkids or even just on your own will love this, where parents and kids can imagine themselves in other times in Idaho history and can role play, being a railroad worker, a building, an architect, a miner, and engage in turn-of-the-century arcade amusements. Concurrently, while we were doing this planning, our state historian wrote a 198-page white paper keying Idaho's history into those themes and stories that would support those guiding principles. And then several design iterations later allowed us to present concepts that could be shared and shaped through statewide conversations. Some of you might have been involved with those. To create extremely relevant exhibit content, we crafted an inclusive system of community engagement, which included focus groups, electronic surveys, workshops, small group meetings. We began a teacher advisory council. We partnered with over 70 university academics and local scholars across Idaho, and we initiated an ongoing partnership with Idaho's five federally recognized tribes. Under the direction of Dr. Gloria Totarica Guena, a formal storyline testing process was conducted in between summer of 2015 and spring of 2016. Nearly 150 Idahoans in 9 focus groups across our state representing diverse interests gave input for our new museum and assisted in prioritizing those potential stories identified in Keith Peterson's white paper that would be considered for the final narrative. These were facilitated through 2-hour hands-on sessions where input was done directly into SurveyMonkey, so we were able to walk out of those focus group sessions with a lot of data that was already tabulated, very powerful. What came out of this commitment to community is the knowledge that Idahoans are highly motivated to visit our state museum because of exhibits and collections about our native people. They want increased access to the State Museum via technology. Immersive multimedia experiences are worth the investment. That the Idaho State Historical Society is expected to be fundamental to the educational mission of Idaho. And there is strong statewide support for the museum renovation. In fact, 94% said they plan to visit the museum when it reopens. Our educational focus is historical literacy, critical thinking and problem solving, and cross-disciplinary learning. Our strategy to create this essential resource for education and lifelong learning included partnering with teachers, the Department of Education, and related stakeholders to ensure that our museum contributes at the highest level to applied learning through school field trips and informal learning, which we all do in museums with our families and friends. We held a day-long educational summit with 30 educators and Department of Education staff. These professionals represented a wide range of ages and discipline areas. Our intention was to ensure that exhibition content aligned with Idaho core curriculum standards on the front end and wasn't thought about later only in programming, but was really integrated into the content. We also wanted to ensure that teachers and students in every grade and in every discipline area were served. History, we believe, is inherent and meaningful to all disciplines, and while Idaho focuses on fourth grade social studies as a history core area, we wanted to make sure that we were fourth grade social studies plus. From this summit, we learned that nearly all of the exhibitions are relevant to all grade, content, skill, and complexity levels, K through career. And importantly, teachers felt that students should have an emotional as well as an intellectual experience at our new museum, and that's a unique experience that they cannot do in the classroom. Teachers also reported that STEM content and process objectives can easily be incorporated. Not only did all of this extensive data collection and activity form statewide powerful connections and help us to understand what really resonated to the people across our state, it continues to serve as an anchor as we develop on-site programming for the museum and technology-based programming for outreach. This work is truly helping us to deliver an essential resource for all of Idahoans in terms of education and history. One truly powerful and heartening aspect of our engagement was working closely with our federally recognized tribes to co-create the content for our new museum. We worked since 2013 continuously with tribal liaisons that were appointed by their chairman. We did that through discussions, emails, teleconferences, personal meetings, and then two all-tribe summits in Boise to develop exhibition stories. We also, out of respect, traveled to each homeland in a show of cooperation for the generosity and time and spirit offered through this collaborative endeavor. During these trips, we discussed photo and artifact selection. We worked with our tribal liaisons to refine narratives, and we captured recordings of origin stories in English and traditional tribal languages. Stories about Idaho's tribes and Native American individuals are purposefully incorporated throughout the entire Idaho narrative. Indeed, the tribe's stories and their inextricable connection to the land beautifully complements our focus on how Idaho's land and people have shaped each other over time. Their stories also include information about the role that Idaho's tribes have played throughout Idaho's history, contemporary economy and culture, and modern-day tribal land stewardship. You may have recently read this, but I think it bears repeating. I'm really honored to share with everyone that this commitment to working with our tribes to create an authentic and broad understanding of the role that Idaho's tribes have always played in Idaho was recently recognized nationally by the National Endowment for the Humanities. The Idaho State Historical Society was awarded one of 10 public humanity projects grants this year in the amount of $400,000 for the scholarship and engagement demonstrated in tribal exhibition development, which is very amazing, really hard to get grant, and so we're really excited about that. Yes, so. I can't tell you all how inspiring this formal community engagement process was. That data collection went on until spring of 2016, and then after that it was time to use that data to then refine the exhibition design, finish the storyline narrative, and the multimedia presentations and artifact and photo selection. So that took an extra year then to create the final design. And in the spring of 2017, our Board of Trustees approved that final design and authorized us to move into the fabrication phase. And that's where designs are translated into shop drawings and the actual manufacturing of the exhibits in an offsite facility. Then you probably all noticed those big semi-trucks starting to roll in February of 2018. The infographic on your table has some great visuals of that. I think there was about 16 semi-truck loads of exhibitions when it was all said and done. They started in February 2018, and we will wrap up early in September. So, yes, we're still building things, even though we're opening on October 12th. But we know everyone wants to see our museum, so we wanted to set a date. So your infographic gives you a great overview of some of the facts of the project. Idahoans and our visitors will experience 36 distinct exhibitions, enjoy over 46 multimedia programs, view nearly 900 photos, discover over 500 artifacts. The project employed over 100 designers, artisans, and craftspeople, and over 31 Idaho-owned businesses and suppliers. And that's a great segue to the final outcome of the project, and that is contributing to the economic vitality of our state. According to a 2017 Oxford Economics study that was commissioned by the American Alliance of Museums, American museums contribute $50 billion annually to our nation's economy, employ nearly 750,000 people, and generate over $12 billion in tax revenue to federal, state, and local governments. In Idaho, you might be surprised to learn that museums contribute $228 million to our economy and support nearly 4,000 jobs. Bill Connors, who you all know, president and CEO of the Boise Metro Chamber, says, "The chamber has long supported the Idaho State Museum and its expansion and renovation. Museums not only create and attract economic activity, but they're part of a portfolio of amenities that help keep and attract good employees and businesses. The new museum will be an important asset in our city's economic development efforts for decades to come." As you all know, Julia Davis Park is the historic and cultural heart of our city and a vibrant cultural campus. The partners in the park collaborate on programming and promotional activities. I believe it's one of the richest assemblages of diverse museums, zoos, libraries, and science centers in our country in a remarkable setting within viewshed of the state capitol. We're all very excited to work collectively together to advance learning in the informal education arena and contribute to our state's well-being. So I'm going to ask you to imagine this experience in preparation of your visit. Perhaps some of you visited the video that was posted to the City Club's webpage, but if you haven't, this will be a journey that hopefully will give you some sense of what's to come. As you enter our new State Museum, you'll be welcomed by a beautiful community room that features the 1878 Carte piano, the first of its kind in Idaho, and the elegant 1910 stained glass dome from the Owyhee Hotel. As you walk across the foyer, you'll experience an expansive interactive map of Idaho, grounding you in its largesse with over 70 unique places to explore. You then encounter the Origins exhibition, which sets the stage for understanding Idaho's beginning, from its tribal origins to the formation of Idaho as a territory and then a state. You'll receive an overview of each tribe's history, and through hand-illustrated animations in a theater setting, be introduced to each tribe's origin story, which begins in the tribal language and then fades into English. You'll be immersed in a seasonal overview of our great state and monumental landscapes, including the Palouse, the Sawtooth Mountains, the craters of the Moon, the Boise Foothills, and much more, with a special focus on connecting people and the land in a media stream that cascades across that gallery in the shape of a river. You'll also have a chance to learn about how the borders of Idaho were shaped through a lighthearted animation of the political intrigue afoot at that time. Then you'll enter the main Idaho galleries and learn about the epic journey of Lewis and Clark across our state and how they were aided by Sacagawea and Watcoose. You'll see signature artifacts such as the Peace Medal and the large bronze sculpture of Sacagawea. The approach to Idaho's interpretation is geographic in nature, offering people from Bonner's Ferry to Haley to Franklin to see themselves in our new museum. And this is awesome statistic that you can use at cocktail parties. That's almost the same distance as between New York and Chicago. So if just imagine that. Idaho, the land and its people, core exhibition includes lakes and forests, where stories of the area's lush forests, mining, and deep lakes have shaped human activity in the north. Here you can walk into a mining square set, learn about the history of mining in the Silver Valley, and how some of the area's natural resources are used around the world today. You can experience the 1910 Big Burn through a major media presentation and feel the heat of that massive forest fire. You can learn details about the present-day land stewardship roles of the Nez Perce, Kootenai, and Coeur d'Alene tribes and understand how Idaho's northern lakes made possible the creation and growth of our recreation and resort industries. Signature artifacts in this section include chief looking glasses, tomahawk pipe, and an 1836 chair that belonged to Nez Perce missionary Henry Spaulding. Wilderness recreation and preservation are center stage in the Mountains and Rivers Gallery, where you'll learn the story of Idaho state parks and recreation, experience what it's like to ride a chairlift up Mount Baldy, take a journey across Idaho on a Salmon River scow, and sit around a campfire where you will be captivated to know about how Governor Baldridge and business leaders came together in 1928 to urge the conservation of our wilderness areas. You'll also come to understand the crucial role that the Shoshone-Bannock tribe has played in restoring threatened fish species. Then as you explore the deserts and canyons section of Idaho, where water management produces power, irrigates farms, and nourishes cities, you'll see how Idahoans have harnessed the power of dams throughout the state. You can try your own hand at managing water flow at Shoshone Falls. You can be reminded of J.R. Simplot's origin in the Magic Valley and his impact on Idaho and the agricultural industry worldwide. Explore the Shoshone Paiute's efforts to record and preserve sacred sites in southern Idaho's canyonlands, and see Idaho through the eyes of a 17-year-old Oregon Trail diarist, Abigail Scott, who would later become one of the nation's leading suffragists, helping lead the struggle for women's voting rights in Idaho. You can then hop on a stationary bike and take a virtual tour through historic Pocatello and Boise, learning more about the history of both places. And then once you're done with our state's overview, you'll be captivated by entering yet another opportunity, Treasures of Idaho Gallery, where you will experience 20 inaugural gowns and ensembles from Mary Hawley's 1911 gown to three gowns from Idaho's First Lady, Lori Otter. And you'll also be able to experience in that gallery through an interactive kiosk our new digital textile program that features over 700 items from our historic dress collection, an initiative that was done in partnership with Idaho State University and their virtualization lab. As you leave those special exhibition areas, you'll journey to the family galleries where you'll connect yourself with Idahoans through stories from Idaho. You'll connect with Idahoans like Joe Albertson, who grew up in Caldwell and started his first grocery store in Boise, or musician Paul Revere, along with his keyboard and set list. We hope you'll sit down at the digital tapestry and input your story. How did you get to Idaho? What made you stay? How do you define yourself? What connects you to others, and what do you contribute to your community? Answer this quiz, and it will connect you to others in the exhibition. Take a selfie, post it, and then you will pop up as part of the exhibit for a little bit. Then you can become a history detective in History Lab and use your analytical skills to identify artifacts, drag and drop architectural features to create your own home design and email it to yourself, and use filters on a map of the United States to learn more about our countries, rivers, roads, and special places. And then enter Boomtown, where your kids are just you, can detonate dynamite, put on a miner's hat, go into the mouth of a mine shaft, blow a train whistle, visit a Chinese mercantile, and of course see Deja Mu, the famous two-headed calf, and more. Yay! We knew that would get a round of applause. And if you still are itching for more history, you can venture into our interpretive gardens, where you will explore homes of early Idahoans and detailed history of Boise, as well as enjoy learning about the plants and animals that Lewis and Clark encountered on their journey west. And I hope that at that point you'll be so inspired that you'll spend some time in our new M store, where you can dive deeper into Idaho history through a selection of curated books and find something remarkable from our Idaho-inspired products that will remind you of us each and every day. Wow. So, in summary, the Idaho State Historical Society has served in a leadership role along with the Smithsonian, the National Archives, and over 200 organizations in a nationwide effort to inspire people to value history for its relevance to modern life and use historical thinking skills to actively engage with and address contemporary issues. We believe history is essential to individuals because it nurtures personal and community and collective identity in a diverse world, and it builds critical thinking skills, including analysis of evidence and the ability to interpret and communicate complex ideas clearly. History is a vital component of vibrant communities because a place becomes a community once it's wrapped in human memory. And communities, as we heard from Bill, and I'm guessing Clay would say this too, with cultural heritage institutions and a strong sense of historical character, attract talent, increase tourism, and enhance business development. And history is essential for our future. We build engaged citizens when individuals convene, express opinions, listen to each other, and take action. Weaving history about discussions of contemporary issues clarifies differing perspectives, introduces new ideas, and leads to greater understanding. And historical knowledge is crucial to protecting democracy. By preserving authentic and meaningful documents, artifacts, images, stories, and places, future generations have a foundation upon which to build and know what it means to be a member of a community and, in fact, an American. People learn in a wide range of ways. Learning can take place in a classroom, in a library, or at home. We learn when we travel and when we engage in conversations such as those championed by the City Club. Learning is clearly a lifelong endeavor, and a well-designed museum inspires learning across all age ranges. Our new Idaho State Museum will be one of the finest museums in the West, which is fitting. It was one of the first museums accredited in the West by the American Alliance of Museums, and your Idaho State Museum opens on October 12th. It will be the culmination of years of planning and visioning along with our statewide community to create a place of education and entertainment which all Idahoans can be proud. History, of course, does not necessarily keep us from repeating past mistakes, but it does help us to understand how we got from here to there. In the process, it helps us to understand more clearly the choices that lie before us and the bonds that can bring us together or the issues that might push us apart. In designing for impact, the new Idaho State Museum stepped out of its comfort zone, just like so many Idahoans before us. We're joining the explorers and the trailblazers, the inventors and entrepreneurs, the risk takers and dreamers. We're setting our sights high, and we welcome all of Idaho to come along for the ride. It's at this new State Museum that we can say with pride and inclusiveness to ourselves and our fellow citizens, be they fourth generation or recent transplants, and anyone who's visiting our great state. Here we are, Idaho. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to share this story with you.
And I've got a good pile of questions here. We'll just dive right in. This is a good question. This is a great way to just kick it off here. Why was the decision, why remove historical from the name of the museum? Which I think is kind of a fun launching question.
The reason for that is back to the idea that history is everything. It's art, it's science, it's math, it is all human endeavor. So what we wanted to do is embrace, of course, our history, but leave the opportunity open for imagining other things that might be part of that collective story.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. There's a few questions here about the interactive exhibits. I think you described them a little bit there at the end, but if folks haven't gone through a real cutting-edge museum of today. I mean, it's not, I joked about this the other day, it's not Disney's Tomorrowland, which is the same today as it was when I was a kid. I mean, this is a very different experience you're going to have. Hands-on, you really are playing a role in the museum in some ways.
Well, those interactive experiences, the multimedia interactive experience, are meant to really amplify the experience. And many of you can appreciate, because we are also glued to our phones now, that people's need for information is really intense. And the day of looking only at artifacts or reading only a lot of label copy is not really as relevant as it once was, and people really enjoy now being immersed in the experience. So, for example, with the 1910 Big Burn, I'll just describe it because it is mind-bending, and it makes me cry every time I see it. So you are in the context of your near the section of mining and forestry, which, of course, in North Idaho are inextricably connected. And then you you push a button, and then a large space about as big as this backdrop, I'd say my 40 by 15 or 20, bright green forest. And then pretty soon you see a timeline along the bottom, and it's the August and September dates in 1910, and you see a little bit of what's going on. You see quotes from forestry folks, and you see quotes from Ken Burns about the fire, and then pretty soon you see the smoke, and then you see lightning hit, and you see sort of the sparks from a train, and then the fire catches, and then pretty soon it's the big blow up, and all of the massive windstorms that happen set the whole screen ablaze, and then it's very full of sound, and you feel the heat of the fire, and then you see what's happening in Wallace, and then it dies down, and so then it can start again. So it's about a 5-minute experience, but it really helps convey that story in a very powerful way, much differently than if you were reading a book. All good ways of learning, it just helps to amplify the experience. Right.
So how does that, this is a good question too, how do those interactive experiences, how does modern museum design affect the role of the docent?
It's a really great question, and we will be recruiting for docents to help bring people through our museum. And I think that one of the things that we're working on is a general, overall new customer service program that we will be doing so that no matter where anyone enters the State Historical Society, whether through the museum or other of our departments, people get welcomed in a brilliant way. And then, of course, we'll have specialized training programs for the volunteers. I'm not kidding you, that 198-page just outline that Keith provided that set the stage for the story is pretty intense. So we will be probably training people in different components so that they will have the opportunity to become a little specialized mm-hmm. in those arenas.
Right. Yeah, before we talk, Jan said, I hope nobody asked me like things like, how did Idaho get its shape? And all the stuff that you're supposed to ask the state historian. And and nobody did, so nice job. We don't have any trick questions. What's the longest river in Idaho? So with all the technology, all this kind of new technology in there, how does that change sort of remote access? Do teachers have access to more of the museum than maybe they used to in the past? How does that work?
Yes, so we're developing a number of technology-based points of access. I mentioned one, which will be you can do it on your own personal device, but you can also do it in the gallery, in the Treasures of Idaho Gallery, so you'll be able to interact with over 700 items from our historic dress collection. But we're also working on other technology-based initiatives, like the way you can actually get a school program at the Capitol, wherever you are in the state. So we'll have live stream video capability, and we're working on that. And then we have one other initiative that we'll be developing, and that's sort of a collections-based activity on the web. And we also will be doing a traveling exhibit around the state. So not only will we be connecting via technology, but physically. And then one of the things that our teacher advisory committee asked for was a lot more content and tools on our website. So our staff is putting together learning lessons on our website so they can just easily download information from their classroom and use them in their classroom as well.
Can the rest of us access that too? You mentioned I think the last number I saw is 65% of Boiseans aren't from here. So we all had things like I did, fourth grade Indiana history. You can ask me any Indiana history question that a fourth grader would have known, and I'll maybe remember it. But a lot of us didn't go through that. So I like that idea that you're fourth grade plus, I think, is how you described it.
Fourth grade plus.
So this is a good question, too. Story is the core of history. And what's the plan to include, like, live storytelling, even recorded storytelling, that bring history to life in the museum?
Well, that's a large question. So storytelling, absolutely. I can't even, we tried to calculate this morning how many stories there are right now in the museum. We figured over 1,000. So we'll get back to everybody on that once we get to the point of actually counting them. But there are stories that are conveyed through smaller multimedia efforts like the story of Nell Shipman and Nell Stockbridge, where it's footage of them and their lives. So you get some of that in the multimedia elements. And certainly with our staff and the way that they're developing programming, we'll be having programming that cascade from the exhibits and lectures and what have you. And under the direction of our new museum administrator, Liz Hobson, we'll be developing those stories and those educational programs over the course of the next year and beyond.
Right. So we have a few questions that kind of talk about specific audiences, and I think a lot of folks are really impressed and happy with the work you've done with the tribes, but and you bring this up with Nell Shipman. And maybe we could just talk about them individually. You can give folks an insight into what's coming up. But how was there any particular attention given to recognizing the leadership and work of women in the history of Idaho?
Of women?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. So we, as much as we could, we wove diversity throughout the entire museum experience. And so you'll find a lot of stories of women, certainly of... When you come into the core galleries, this is just an example, you are greeted by someone in Idaho's history that is a kind of a cutout, and there's a quote about them. And so in the northern part of the state, it's Sister Alfreda Elsenchen, who was one of the St. Gertrude sisters and founded the monastery. And then in the central part of the state, it's Polly Bemis. So she came to Idaho at a very young age, early in the state. We have her shoes. And so women's stories are woven throughout the narrative as well as men, people of different backgrounds, people of different cultures.
Right. Speaking of, someone else asked about how did you work the Chinese population into the experience. Polly Bemis is a good example of that.
Polly Bemis is one story, and then there is the, for those of you who remember the original museum, we had the Chinese mercantile. That is brought back to a degree, not with so many of the original collections, but again, woven into the entire narrative.
Yeah, I'll take a quick aside, because I imagine, how many items do you have to choose from, and how many ultimately can end up in the museum, right? I mean, it's a tiny fraction of the artifacts that the Historical Society has access to. What's that process like as you're saying, okay, we want to reflect this piece here, and here's how we can do it? I imagine there are moments where things get pretty heated. This is a really valuable piece. Everyone should see it.
Yes, there were a lot of debates, certainly. I think it all goes back to the story. So whoever wrote the brilliant question about the story, it's the story is the anchor upon which all decisions are made. And so once you kind of set that parameter of land and people shaping each other, and then Keith laid out several stories in each of those thematic areas, and we tested them, and we came down to the top five or six, then you look for artifacts, photos, multimedia that help illuminate those stories. And we have about 50,000 items in the museum's collection, and most museums can exhibit 1 to 2% of their collection. So we're right on target with that. The other thing that's really important in terms of that photo selection, it probably took 4 or 5 times the number of photos to get to the almost 900 photos. And we tried very hard to make sure we were choosing photos from various repositories, the university repositories, small museums across the state, and then when necessary, we commissioned photos when we needed to.
So it was two-headed calf, and then everything else was open for discussion.
There are a few signature items that came back, the two-headed calf, and then, of course, the bar and the Oahe, beautiful dome from the Oahe Hotel.
Was there anything that you were like, I don't care, I'm the director, this is going in the museum?
Oh, you know, I think that the opposite was true. I really fought against the two-headed cow, but it got in anyway. So.
You can't admit that. We won't.
No. Well, you know, we had to bring him back. We learned from our focus groups that he was a favorite guy. But I think that one of the paintings that's really beautiful that I find so compelling is the painting of the state seal, and it's done by. A woman before women had the right to vote. And so I think that is a beautiful painting. It will be in the gallery. So there's the gallery that has the costumes and textiles, and the gallery next to it is a larger gallery. It will be filled with beautiful paintings from our collection, and that will be a featured piece.
Painted on wood, right?
Yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Emma Edwards.
The only state seal, I believe, designed by a woman in
the
United States. So I took us off track. I had one more question about the different audiences. and it's about religious settlements, Mormon settlements. I mean, how did you go about kind of making sure that those voices were captured and it was reflected in the experience that folks are going to have?
That's a very good question. So again, we tried to weave some amount of that area into the stories themselves. Of course, Sister from the mm-hmm. monastery represented one person. We didn't really get heavily involved in religious dogma per se, but tried to reflect people who had a certain religious background. And in the southeastern section of the exhibits, we talk about Mormon farmers and their great contribution to mm-hmm. dryland farming. And so we tried to weave it in that way, where it was again connected to the land and not the story about religion per se, but the story of people who were connected to the major themes.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So there are a couple of questions about the Historical Society in general and the museum and its connections to the rest of Idaho. You talked a little bit about traveling exhibits, but what kind of presence does the Historical Society have outside the Treasure Valley? And can you talk about the efforts to bring museum content to the rural and far-flung communities?
Another big question. So, of course, this is one of the great benefits of being a historical society that has the SHPO and state archives and museum as well as historic sites. So the state owns several historic sites around the state, including the Franklin Historic Properties down in southeast Idaho. We own the Stricker Ranch and Homestead near Twin and the Pierce Courthouse up in Pierce. And so we have presence just by virtue of sites around the state. And then, of course, the State Historic Preservation Office works with certified local governments around the state, and that means governments that have preservation ordinances or do very much hands-on in the community's historic preservation that emanates out of the Historic Preservation Act. And then the State Archives works with counties and cities all over the state to help do records management, because we're the repository for permanent city, state, and county government records. So we have a lot of people around the state at any one point in time. And then the museum, again, will connect through technology. We also serve as quite a consultancy role for small museums, because everyone needs help. And so we are often called upon for technical assistance and support. And we do that to the best of our ability. And then we're very excited to translate this museum experience into a traveling exhibition so that people around the state can see it if they can't get to Boise.
Right. Right. And on kind of the inverse question, and there's a couple around this, is there space in the museum? Are there rotating, do you bring in outside exhibits in this new museum? Or is there do you have space for that, rotating collections?
Yes, so this is one of the great things about the added space, is that the Treasures of Idaho is about 2,500 square feet, and then the Syringa Gallery is about 3,000. So we can bring in or feature two exhibits, or we can feature one exhibit and put that space together. And the Foundation for Idaho History is one of their priorities as we move forward, is to help fundraise and get sponsorship for bringing in major special exhibitions. And one of the things that we all know that we like to see when we go to museums around the country, and for those who travel internationally, is to go see those special exhibitions. That's kind of a one-time amazing opportunity to see particularly great collections or a particular artist or a particular genre of material. So we're able to do that, and we will be doing that on a sequential basis.
So this is a very specific question. Are you still accepting donated artifacts?
Oh my gosh, yes. So yes. We across the entire agency, we rely on donations of artifacts to build a collection. We have a very small purchase fund, but we rely heavily on those donations. So
right.
Thank you.
So keep them coming. Also, this is another one of your famous artifacts is the Ruby Ridge door. Are there plans to have that displayed in the permanent galleries?
The Ruby Ridge door was not ever our artifact. It was loaned to us by the family, and it was returned after the Essential Idaho exhibition. And it will not be part of this particular exhibition, but you know, certainly a topic that's of interest to people, right, and might be something that would warrant a special exhibition in the future.
Right. So this follows up on that a little bit. I mean, how do you confront those aspects of our history, as this questioner says, that are less than savory? Japanese internment camps, white supremacy strongholds, even controversial land. I mean, this is a state where one of the cities is still pretty mad at the other city for becoming the state capital, right? I mean, politics are a big part of history everywhere, especially here. So how do you kind of address those moments?
Well, I think part of it is just sort of balance, because you want to have those unsavory stories and you want to address them, but you don't want it so overwhelming that people are kind of sad about Idaho's history. So the rule of thumb is about 4 to 1, sort of 4 great stories to 1 maybe unsavory story. I mean, if you think about it from a process point of view. But I'll tell you how we did some of those stories. So for example, in northern Idaho, where we address mining, clearly mining had great benefit to the state, but it also had great challenges in terms of environmental degradation, and the way that we addressed that was certainly address that it happened, but also talked about how mining today is very different and how through human ingenuity we reclaimed the land and we captured back the beauty of the land, and how proud the Coeur d'Alene tribe is to monitor Lake Coeur d'Alene and its health. So that's one way, is to tell the story but then bring it up to the present and talk about kind of both sides of the story. And then the other way, a very difficult story, and that is with working with our tribes. They love the origin stories, and they love, it was their idea to talk about contemporary land stewardship. But when they saw the kind of mock-ups for those, they were like, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's something missing, and it's all the middle. It's the massacre, dislocation, relocation, boarding school, and basically trauma that is continuing today in the tribal community, and can we address that some way? And the way we did that is we asked them to write it, because that's not a story that our staff felt was their story to tell. So Sarah Manning from the Shoshone Paiute tribe helped draft that narrative. Of course, it was edited by our staff. And so that story is told, but when it becomes that unsavory, sometimes you want that from the authentic voice and not try to interpret it through your lens.
This is kind of a fun question. And where were the items stored for 4 years? How did you, do you have them already in your archives? And were there challenges around moving things out of the building and back into it?
That's a really great story. Well, we do have an off-site storage facility. We have 50,000 objects, and only about 1,000, well, 500 to 1,000 can be on exhibit at any one point in time. So, of course, that move out was one that our curators planned. It was brilliant, and the guys from Mountain Home Air Force Base were terrific. So things were cataloged. Well, they were cleaned, cataloged, and packed very carefully so that they could go into storage. So everything that was in storage is in lockdown. There's special cases that are locked. There's special environmental controls. There's security and what have you. So, and then the staff right now, as we speak, are installing. They're working this week and the next couple of weeks to install right behind the installation of all the exhibit furniture.
Well, and that's just one of my questions now. But I about a year ago, I was in the British Museum. Overwhelmed with stuff, right? It's just absolutely overwhelming. How do you decide? I mean, there's power in those objects, but there's also so much context you get from how you present them. I mean, you can't just say, here's 10,000 things that tell Idaho's story, interpret it yourself.
Well, this is where I share that back to the sort of full vertical integration of storyline, multimedia, writing, photographs, and sometimes, I mean, y'all remember, that's sort of a term that you think about when you hear about Simplot's business model, but it's true even in this kind of a presentation where the story and the way the story is outlined, then as you work through iterations of design, you do a charrette, and then the charrette kind of gives a sense of what's possible where, and then you keep moving closer and closer and closer and closer to the writing and the photography and the collections, and you try to pick the objects and the photographs and the multimedia that best illustrate the story and the point. And then, so, because as I think we wanted to be so sure that we were making an impact with a small amount of space, when we got past the focus groups and Keith went back to try to prioritize all the stories, then we created takeaway messages for every single exhibit area. So as we then kind of brought the stories down to what would be decided upon, every story has a takeaway message, and then those relate right to the best collections that illustrate them.
Right. So this is a tough one. This is the hardest hitting question you're going to get. Despite all that planning and preparation, is there anything you'd change?
Well, the economy could have waited a year before it got crazy great. So we, as you all read in recent newspaper articles, we're about a year behind schedule because we came out of the recession. We budgeted during the recession. We came out of the recession a little bit short, like $2 million. So we had to go back for another round of funding. So if we would have been more brilliant and could have hit that budget, we would have saved $2 million. But, you know, really, there was nothing that we could have done about that. It's great for our city and great for the whole community. So I don't think we would have changed anything. I think it was doing the right thing and doing it right.
Right. And talking about, you know, the opening. So now you're October 12th. So we're locked in, right? Are we locked in?
We're locked in. I think Liz and I have to go now. We have to go install some artifacts.
But sometimes, hey, I'm up for the newspaper business. Sometimes you need a deadline, or you just write forever, right? So.
Well, we had a very detailed, as you all might imagine, schedule of values with a very detailed spreadsheet on installation. And so, I mean, we've been pretty great at following the budget, the plan, the installation schedule. Once the museum's building was done, I mean, all of the exhibits were really designed with the guys who, and LKB Architects, integrated the design of the exhibits into the building. So they were all compatible. So once the building was done and the design team could get in there, it went fairly smoothly. So, I think we're good. I think that the thing about it is that you never know, but I think we're good.
That's right. We'll keep our fingers crossed. And this is a late breaking question. It's a good one, actually. What aspect? And again, this, you're not the state historian, but you've been through this whole process so closely. What aspect of Idaho's history do you think is the most misunderstood or neglected?
Well, I think that one of the things that we really tried to do is to bring history right up to the present. And I think I don't think it's misunderstood or neglected, but it's just a different point of view. So, in thinking about mining, going back to an anchor industry in North Idaho, we were wanting to be sure we told the early story. But if you talk to Hecla now, what they're interested in is in mining is workforce development, and we're partnering with them to do programming so that they can inspire young people to go into mining. Because now, to talk to Luke at Hecla, he says miners can do more in their pajamas with a joystick than they could do in the past. So that idea of bringing history to the present and connecting people to those industries now, pretty amazing and pretty inspiring. So I'm not sure it's misunderstood. It's just a new way of thinking about it.
Right, and that actually leads to what I was planning for my last question, which was, how do you? I mean, a month after you open this museum, we'll have made history, right? We'll probably have the first female lieutenant governor in Idaho history, barring some unusual third-party run. Well, I mean, history happens every day, I suppose. How do you kind of spend this kind of investment and have it not be a 40-year temporary change like last time?
Well, I think you bring up a brilliant point, and that is that history never stays the same. You want to address as many contemporary issues as possible. So we'll do that through changing exhibits. We have a space for pop-up exhibits, so if something happens that you don't want to take 2 years to plan or 4 years to plan, that you can do that. You can connect people all the time through technology, and we love the idea that our curators can carry on conversations via the internet to be able to talk to people, taking care of your wedding gowns or what have you. So you always kind of key into what's interesting. And the work that Gloria did, again, back to those volumes of data that we have, she thinks that'll be good for about 5 years. And so we can try to look at what's of highest level of interest to people as we develop programming and new things for people to do. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Director Gallimore, very much. We, of course, have one of those fine City Club mugs for her. It's tucked into the podium. I'm going to grab that. I want to thank the radio audience at Boise State Public Radio, and thank you all here today. And let's give Director Gallimore a big round of applause.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the City Club of Boise, a public forum discussing important issues of the day in a nonpartisan, civil manner. The next City Club Lunch Forum is on Thursday, the 6th of September, and will focus on the intersection of policing and mental health. You can find more on that event at cityclubofboise.org or by calling 208-371-2221. Connect on Facebook and Twitter by searching for City Club of Boise.